Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Jean Marie.
Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX.
On today's episode, we will be discussing mast cell activation syndrome and bone marrow transplants with today's guest, Tara. Tara lives in New York with her husband and two children. She's been advocating for passage of a bill since 2011, which would allow children of sick parents to be considered for district school bus transportation. Her son is a college sophomore, and her daughter is a high school sophomore. Her son is studying business, and her daughter attends a high school that has a special program for the arts. Her daughter is also musically talented and sings and plays the saxophone. And at age 13, she began co-writing original songs that will be featured in a documentary about Tara's health journey called Second Chance, which was produced by Matthew White from Fourth Coast Productions in Rochester, New York. Looking back, Tara realized that she had the onset of MCAS in her 20s.
Thank you for joining us today, Tara.
Yeah, hi, Tara.
Good morning, everyone.
I understand, Tara, that a mast cell is a type of cell found in the body which releases histamine and heparin during an inflammatory or allergic reaction. Can you tell our listeners what happens in a mast cell disorder?
Well, Ron, when a mast cell works properly, the body is protected against inflammation, parasites, or allergens. In a healthy person, these chemicals will act to protect and heal the body, but in a person with mast cell activation syndrome, these same chemicals are inappropriately released when triggered.
And Tara, is there anything in particular that triggers your, and we're going to abbreviate it from now on, MCAS?
There are many possible triggers for MCAS, which can include a variety of different foods, exercise, chemicals, fragrances, and even stress. Many sufferers struggle to identify their specific triggers and continue to discover new triggers for many years after they are diagnosed. In my case, my triggers unfortunately included a whole host of things, including multiple foods, wine, alcohol, food preservatives, food dyes, chemicals, strong odors, perfumes, colognes, pet dander, trees, grasses, weeds, dust, mold, sunlight, temperature changes, medications, exercise, stress, and believe it or not, even other triggers as well.
Wow.
And what happens to you, Tara, when you're exposed to one of these triggers?
Unfortunately, my case was extremely severe. Some of the things that would happen to me would lead to severe abdominal cramping, vomiting, diarrhea, hives, facial swelling, constriction of airways, and hypotension. And I would often have anaphylactic type of reactions.
That's really scary.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Tara, what can you tell us what you do to alleviate those symptoms?
As I mentioned, my symptoms often included abdominal cramping, vomiting, diarrhea, hives, facial swelling, constriction of airways, hypotension, sometimes like a heat rash presentation. And what they did to help alleviate the symptoms was to put me on H1 blockers, which would include things like Allegra, Zyrtec, Claritin, H2 blockers. For me, it was Zantac, a leukotriene inhibitor, which was Singulair, a mast cell stabilizing drug, which in my case was Crommelin sodium. I was placed on Xolair. I would use an inhaler as needed, Benadryl as needed, and of course, if the reaction was very, very severe, I would need to use an EpiPen.
Wow, that's really intense. And when did you start having these symptoms? And was there something like that set them off? I think in the past we've spoken with someone who had an issue where they were actually struck by a vehicle. And after that, for some reason, their body just thought everything was an attack. And that's when their symptoms develop. But was there anything that set these symptoms off? And was it something that you realized what was going on right away? Did you go to your doctor right away? How did things progress?
Well, I'm not really sure of what started the whole process. I know my symptoms now, looking back in retrospect, started in my 20s. But at that time, my attacks were very infrequent. So I would have attacks maybe once a year, then it became twice a year, then it was, you know, every month, and then it was biweekly, weekly. So the attacks just became more and more frequent and more severe as the years went on. Initially, I would be treated by the emergency room. And as I mentioned, as the attacks became more frequent and more severe, I was treated by an allergist immunologist. And as I became more ill, it became very difficult to figure out what was going on. And then I started with all different types of specialists. And it took many, many years for me to be properly diagnosed.
So was the person that diagnosed you finally, would that have been an allergist? Who takes care of problems like that?
Well, in my case, again, as I mentioned, I saw a whole host of specialists. So I was seen by allergy immunology. I was seen by rheumatologists. I was seen by pulmonologists, cardiologists, endocrinologists, internists.
I bet you wish they could all talk to each other, right?
I was going to say, it sounds like they should have all sat down in a room together and said, you know, here's what's going on. Because, wow.
It's got to be very frustrating. So it took you years to get a diagnosis then, right?
Yes. And ultimately, it was an allergist immunologist / rheumatologist that did diagnose me up at Brigham and Women's. But I have to say, I was a patient that traveled to the Mayo Clinic. I was a patient at the National Institutes of Health. I was a patient at Hopkins, most of the major hospitals in New York City, Yale, Boston College, and then ultimately, as I mentioned, I was diagnosed at Brigham and Women's Hospital.
Okay.
But I had, you know, multiple diagnoses. I was diagnosed with mixed connective tissue disease, Lyme disease, alopecia universalis, chronic fatigue syndrome, severe clinical depression, and then ultimately I was diagnosed with the mast cell activation syndrome.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, I'm glad they were finally able to get a diagnosis. But now that you and your health team know what's causing your symptoms, what types of different treatment protocols have they prescribed for you?
Well, I had tried over the course of my illness a lot of different immunosuppressive drugs, monoclonal antibodies, immune modulating drugs, chemotherapy agents, the mast cell protocol that I spoke about with the H1, H2 blockers, the leukotriene inhibitor, the mast cell stabilizing drugs, the anti-IgE therapy. And it worked to a point, but for me, the disease was just too debilitating. I was a patient at MSK in New York City. And ultimately, we decided back in 2015 to proceed with an autologous stem cell transplant, whereby I used my own cells in hopes of putting the disease in remission or having it cured. That ultimately did not work. June of 2018, I had an allogeneic bone marrow transplant with an unrelated donor, which I still continue to recover from. So we're hoping this is going to be successful. My doctor has not transplanted many, many patients for this disease.
I've heard that it's very, very new for that.
It's very rare, the disease, and I think that this treatment protocol is still very new, and we're kind of you know, treading water as we go along here. So I think he feels where in a lot of transplant cases, the average recuperation period may be somewhat around a year. For me, it may take 2 years, and I had a lot of complications from the transplant.
Oh,
so
I'm sorry.
We're kind of all learning as we go along.
Okay. Well, and that's, I mean, it's an intense disease, and it sounds like it's been an intense process to try to figure out what's the best treatment for you. I mean, chemotherapy and stem cells and bone marrow, that's a lot for your body to take when it's already under such
stress.
Yes, such stress.
Right.
Can you tell us, Tara, how has MCAS affected your life in ways that you hadn't expected? Were there any positive things to come out of all this?
It affects you immensely. At times, I was very, very, very ill. I used to teach. I was a special education teacher for many, many years, and at points, I became too ill, so I ultimately had to retire very early on. Just prior to diagnosis, I was about 100 pounds and on a feeding tube for about 12 hours a day because, in my case, my body had lost its ability to properly absorb vitamins, minerals, nutrients from foods. So I was losing a tremendous amount of weight and a tremendous amount of muscle mass. And at that time, my doctors really felt I was flirting with death. So as I mentioned, you know, I did have to retire. But throughout the process, I did a tremendous amount of research. I certainly have learned a lot. And what has come out of it is the documentary, and we're trying to tell the story in a very unique way because my daughter is vocally talented. What we were able to do was we were able to work collaboratively with some songwriters and music producers, and we wrote our own songs to tell the story. So I was hospitalized quite extensively. And what helped me to get through it was really writing the songs and music. And like I said, I spent a lot of time doing that. And of course, also another positive thing, which will hopefully come to be, is the school bus transportation legislation that I've been working on in New York State since 2011.
So, right. We heard about that.
Yeah, we're hoping to share the story. The legislation component is included in the documentary as well. And we're hoping to raise awareness about rare disease, to educate about the bone marrow transplant process, to encourage people to become bone marrow donors, and then to show how music really can have healing powers. But I would say, you know, one of the most important things is because bone marrow transplantation is being used for so many different diseases today, including cancers and autoimmune diseases, that we really hope more people will consider becoming bone marrow donors, especially in ethnic backgrounds where the registry is low.
Right. Well, and there are situations where people who would like to donate bone marrow are precluded from doing so because of their own medical conditions. For example, I was a bone marrow registry, or I registered to be on the bone marrow registry, and I was contacted to inform me that someone needed my bone marrow, and I was thrilled to be able to do that. But then I was informed that a surgery that I had had eliminated me from the ability, you know, from that being able to be a donor. So like, for example, if you have bovine tissue transplanted at any point, whether you're having a bone graft because of dental issues or something of that nature or elsewhere, they might eliminate you from the registry, which is kind of sad.
That's sad because it's an incredible thing for patients. And I think even people that donate just feel this sense of, I can't explain it because I've never donated, but, you know, I've been on the recipient side, but it's just got to be such a wonderful feeling to know that you're part of saving somebody's life.
Sure, sure. And I think whatever we can do to help one another, I mean, it makes the world better for all of us. And Tara, I've read that reducing the amount of chemicals that you utilize on a daily basis may help patients with MCAS. Here at Podcast DX, we use natural, non-toxic, biophilic products wherever and whenever possible to avoid excessive perfumes and dyes in the environment. Do you follow that protocol, or, you know, with all of the issues that, or all of the things that can activate your syndrome, what do you do at home?
Yeah, I bet your house is very allergen reduced.
Friendly, yes.
Yeah, friendly, right.
Yes, we try to, you know, as much as possible, I try to avoid chemicals and odors and fragrances and dyes and other triggers. I've also, over the years, worked with a clinical nutritionist who is fabulous, and I've incorporated different vitamins and minerals into my plan as part of being a bone marrow transplant patient. One of the protocols that I still have to follow for a variety of reasons is I wear gloves and a mask.
Mm-hmm.
So that offers me an extra layer of protection. Just from being on Facebook and being a part of different forums that are geared towards mast cell patients, I'm starting to see that more and more mast cell patients are wearing masks. So that helps, but it's certainly difficult to follow all the time. And I find this year, this season coming up is extremely difficult because there's just so many different odors that are around from the different spices. So it's a hard for me in particular.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the worst part of the journey has been so far? The treatment or the disease?
One of the worst parts for me was actually going in for different consultations with
okay.
different doctors and explaining your situation. And mast cell disease, there are two different forms. There's the mast cell activation syndrome and the mastocytosis form. It presents itself very differently in patients. And if you're a severe case like myself, I was affected systemically. So to go in and talk about all the things that are going wrong with your body, I've had doctors look at me like I was basically out of my mind. And probably one of the hardest things that they said to me was they thought I was suffering from severe clinical depression. And that was so far from the case. I knew that something was drastically wrong.
Sure.
And it was very hard to find a diagnosis. Ultimately, when I was diagnosed within like an hour or an hour and a half based upon my symptoms and everything that I had told the doctor. But I found that some doctors just, you know, didn't listen. And instead of saying, which some doctors did, I know that you're sick, but I just don't know what's wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
They would say, you know, mm-hmm. oh, you're suffering from depression. Or
that's
terrible. Yeah, many times that seems to be the default with doctors when they don't have an answer.
Well, and I
right.
guess the whole thing of having to have a label, I mean, I understand that will begin, like, you know, that will be the basis for a treatment protocol. But, you know, maybe they shouldn't always feel compelled to put a label on something. Mm-hmm. And they'll have to say, you know, I don't know. I want you to find answers. I want to help you in any way I can. But I don't know exactly what's going on. And as you said earlier, it might take someone whose knowledge extends beyond just one specific area in
mm-hmm.
medicine
right.
and, you know, or in a panel setting where they can all talk things out and say, here's what I understand. And I'm sorry that they put that on you.
Yeah,
really,
for sure. For sure. And actually being told that over and over, you might end up becoming depressed.
I was going to say, I would be surprised if you didn't have some depression.
Just based on based on what the doctors were doing
Absolutely.
To you also.
Right, and there were some doctors that let me know that they had an education at a particular Ivy League school and that they were right 99.99% of the time. And
that's when you turn around and walk away.
Right, yeah. Right.
Oh, yeah. My.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not impressed with your paperwork.
Yeah.
No, in Tara, I would say if we could grant honorary doctorates, you would be at the top of that list
right.
for getting one.
Tara, looking forward, how do you personally feel about the research or different treatment options of MCAS?
Well, again, this is a rare disease, so we need to keep raising awareness levels about MCAS and mastocytosis. You know, this disease is very, very real, oh, yeah. and can often be misdiagnosed or underdiagnosed. So I'm hopeful that the research will continue and more treatment options will become available to patients. And I'm also hoping that my experience as a bone marrow transplant will yield very positive results.
Oh, for sure.
Potentially open the door for other patients in the future.
Right, for sure. Tara, do you have any advice for our listeners who have either recently been diagnosed or might suspect that they have mast cell activation syndrome?
Well, I think it's important to, as you go along on your journey or you do consultations with doctors, to just know that we as patients know our bodies best. We know when something is wrong. Initially, I was diagnosed with many diseases and illnesses that were not fitting. I just kept moving on to other doctors and other medical facilities. I did a tremendous amount of research. I asked a lot of questions. I would go into doctors' offices and make suggestions and ask if, you know, we could try a particular thing. I was my own biggest advocate.
Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing you were.
And you have to be. And for those patients that are recently diagnosed, you have to stay strong. You can never give up. You know, try to make sure that you have a very good support system. You have to try to stay positive and you have to keep up a good fight. This is a very, very difficult disease to contend with at times, but you have to plug along.
Tara, thank you ever so much for speaking with us today. We really appreciate it. If our listeners want to find out more about you and the upcoming documentary, how can they do so?
I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under Tara, last name Notrica, N-O-T-R-I-C-A, and also under Sammy, S-A-M-M-I, Sings, S-I-N-G-Z, which is my daughter. So we try to post different videos or different information right now, mostly pertaining to the documentary and her singing.
Do you know when that documentary will be coming out?
I'm not really sure. I can't say for sure.
This particular episode will be posting December 10th. So
if you hear before then.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be, your documentary will be out before then.
I don't think it's going to be out before then.
Okay.
The trailer is up on Fourth Coast Productions' website under films. The name of it, again, is Second Chance, so the trailer could be viewed. But I think it's going to take him, you know, some time. He calls the documentaries his passion projects, Matthew White, who's the producer. So he works on them in his spare time when he's not working on his marketing videos that he does. So it's going to take some time still.
Okay.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing that.
Tara, thank you again for taking time out to speak with us and you know, our listeners about MCAS. We really do appreciate it. And also, if our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcasts.
And as always, this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a healthcare condition or a medical condition or before undertaking a new healthcare regime. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
All right, Jean. Till next week.